a bright golden haze on the meadow.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow.
The corn is as high as an elephant's eye.
And it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of The Bing Crosby Show. Tonight we have Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart back on The Bing Crosby Show as his guests. I love it when they're on, especially when Lauren Bacall is on with Bing. She does such a good job of seemingly to make Bing feel uncomfortable. It's just so refreshing and so fun to hear them, and everything just sounds so natural. I just love them on the show, and I think you're going to enjoy it too. For the Railroad Hour that we have after The Bing Crosby Show, it's unfortunately one of ours that is in low quality sound and things, so it's not going to sound the best, but at least we have it. So I hope you enjoy that as well with Gordon McRae. And without further ado, let's get into Bing Crosby, Lauren Bacall, and Humphrey Bogart having some fun together. Enjoy.
Chesterfields are much milder, with an extraordinarily good taste and no unpleasant aftertaste. They satisfy millions.
Sound off!
Sound off!
Sound off for Chesterfield!
Good evening, folks, a big hello. We're here to start the Crosby Show. There's lots of laughs and plenty of fun, so settle back with a milder one.
Sound off!
For Chesterfield!
Sound off!
For Chesterfield!
Try your pack of Chesterfields and do it
today!
Someone waits for me.
This is Ken Carpenter welcoming you to the Bing Crosby Show for Chesterfield, produced and transcribed in Hollywood with John Scott Trotter and his orchestra, Judd Collins of the Mares, and Bing's guests, Mr. Humphrey Bogart and Miss Lauren Bacall.
Really?
Yes, really.
It's a surprise to me.
Really? You haven't seen them at
no.
all? And now, ladies and gentlemen, with St. Patrick's Day just a few days away, we'd like to present a man who wears the green and sings with a groan, Bing O'Crosby.
Oh, hey, hey, hey. Yes, sir, Ken, you are. You're right. St. Patrick's Day will soon be upon us. I tell you, we used to have some real St. Patrick's Day parties when I was a kid up in Spokane.
Really? Oh. What'd you do at the parties?
Oh, we'd all gather over at somebody's house, push back the furniture, roll back the rugs, and fight.
Sounds jolly. Well, Bing, they have lots of St. Patrick's Day parties right here in Hollywood. Doesn't Pat O'Brien throw a big party every year?
Oh, he throws a wingding, I want to tell you. The whole mob gets together at O'Brien's. Frank McHugh, Bill Gargan, Dave Butler, Jimmy Cagney, Leo McCary, Leo Fitzgerald, Jack O'Melveny, and Joe DiMaggio.
Joe DiMaggio?
Yes, he comes.
I thought the party was just for the Irish. How'd he get in there?
Oh, he makes wonderful meatballs.
Bing, tell me more about Pat O'Brien's affair. What time does a St. Pat's party usually break up?
Well, I'll give you a rough idea, Ken. Last year, when I left O'Brien's house after the party, I passed a vacant lot, and I saw a fella putting up a fireworks stand. Quite a party. Say, Ken, we've sort of been talking along the Irish vein, but I think it might be a good time to spring a new Irish tune. This was written by Mr. Preston Foster, eminent actor of the films. You're acquainted with him, I'm sure. And Perry Bodkin, our guitar player, wrote the melody. It's called Tu Shillelagh O'Sullivan. This is Irish with sort of a Western... decor. John O. Scott, are you ready?
To
Shillelagh O'Sullivan.
Ah, he was a mighty man. Listen to what I'm telling you now. A mighty, mighty man.
There's many a man that rode a horse across the western plain. There's never been one like the Irishman. O'Sullivan was his name. He never packed a shooting iron. The need he never felt. With two shillelaghs always there, hanging on his belt.
Oh, yippee-ki-yi, yippee-pum-po.
Oh, begorrer and yippee-ki-yo. Two shillelaghs O'Sullivan, he'll give any man a go.
Oh, the shillelagh. Course you know what we call it, don't you? The Tipperary rifle. You never have to reload it.
This bronco-busting Irishman from the side of Erin's Isle was after living peaceful like he always wore a smile. But when the smile was leaving him, in a fight he'd come unwound. Bad cess to any crossing him, and they'd wind up on the ground.
Oh, yippee-ki-yi, oh, yippee-ki-yo.
Begorrer and yippee-ki-yo. To Shillelagh O'Sullivan, he'd give any man a go.
Why, he was so strong, O'Sullivan. He could put his right hand in his own left hip pocket and he could hold himself out at arm's length.
No man can do that.
It's O'Sullivan I'm talking about.
Oh, well, he could.
Now go on back and sit down.
Across the range from morn to night, he rode for days and days, a-fixing fences here and there and a-picking up the strays. A cattle spread he really built, as big as Ireland, where he could range a million head and a shamrock be his brand.
Oh, yippee-ki-yi, yippee-pum-po.
Oh, begorrer and yippee-ki-yi.
To Shillelagh O'Sullivan, he'd give any man a
bend of his lip and the back of his hand and the toe of his shoe to boot.
Oh, to Shillelagh O'Sullivan.
Now, if you're ever riding through the sagebrush wilderness and you suddenly come upon acres and acres of shamrock sprinkled with stardust, well, you'll be after knowing that you've just arrived at the O'Sullivan spread, known as the Lazy Leprechaun. Stop in, won't you? Have a cup of tea. Tequila, that is. The mask is off. Yes, the mask is off in cigarette advertising. Chesterfield is the first to name all its ingredients, and here they are.
Chesterfield uses the right combination of the world's best tobaccos, pre-tested by laboratory instruments for the most desirable smoking qualities, and kept tasty and fresh by the only tried and tested moistening agents, proved by over 40 years of continuous use in USA tobacco products as entirely safe for use in the mouth. Pure natural sugars and chemically pure, harmless, and far more costly glycerol. Nothing else. You can be glad if you smoke Chesterfields, because they give you every advantage known to modern science.
For you, this means that Chesterfields are much milder with an extraordinarily good taste and no unpleasant aftertaste, all for your smoking pleasure and protection. They satisfy millions. A little earlier in the program, we made an announcement which was received with more than usual enthusiasm when we indicated that our guests for this evening were going to be Mr. Humphrey Bogart and Miss Lorraine Bacall. That's the attractive couple who paid us a visit just 1 month ago, I believe. I'm happy now to report the arrival of the first of our guests. Here, ladies and gentlemen, then, is the very charming actress, the very charming, delightful lady, Miss Lorraine Bacall.
Hello, Bing.
You're very nice to visit us again, Lorraine.
Now, Bing, let's not be formal.
Formal?
I thought we agreed the last time I was here that you'd call me by my nickname.
Well...
Why can't you call me Baby?
I intended to call you Baby, but I always forget.
But why?
Well, I guess because I'm just not used to girl babies.
Understanding.
Well, I'll never understand it. But tell me, Baby...
There, you said it.
I did it. I got away with it. Tell me, Baby, how's Humphrey getting along now?
Oh, not so good.
What's the matter with
Bing, Bogie? Bing, you should never have let him sing on your program last month.
What happened?
Well, he now firmly believes that he's America's next great crooner.
Well, it's an open field.
Well, in an open field, he doesn't sound bad.
I see what you mean.
Oh, but in the house, it's awful.
Why, you're not serious. I can't believe it. This boy thinks he's got a voice. Is it honest?
Yeah, and every night he insists on going into the nursery and singing Little Stevie to sleep.
And does the baby like it?
No, I don't think so. When Bogey is singing, he curls up into a ball and sticks the end of his diapers in his ears.
You've got a serious problem. Outside of it annoying the baby, what other singing does Bogey do?
Well, he always sings in the shower.
You've lost him. He's gone.
He spends hours in there, and he's so silly. He rubs soap in his eyes on purpose.
Why?
So he can cry like Johnny Ray.
You do that with soap, huh? I've tried everything. I couldn't get it.
Bing, stay as sweet as you are.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Bing, you've just got to talk Bogey out of this idea that he's a singer. Here he comes now.
Oh, yes, folks, here's Humphrey Bogart.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello, baby.
Hello, baby.
Hi, Bogey.
Oh, here, boy. Hold my music.
What are you singing? John Peel or something? Hold your music. What for?
What for,
yes.
He says. What for? What's the matter, Crosby? You afraid of a little new blood?
Oh, did you get some new blood?
Now, you know what I mean.
No, I was just asking. I thought I might get some for myself.
Well, don't tell me your troubles.
Why don't you just be your sweet, charming self and forget about being a singer?
Yeah, but I just started.
Let me tell you something, Bogey. It just could be, you know, that you're a little too old to start singing.
It just could be that you're old enough to stop singing.
Say, you know something? You could be a reconditioned singer. I see a lot of them advertised on television with new bobbins and everything.
He needs more than bobbins.
Hey, what is this? My own wife.
Now, let's get this straight once and for all. Bing is my favorite singer, and you're my favorite husband.
You're still playing his record, A Mule Train. Even the mules gave up on that.
Well, I'm not giving up.
Yeah? Let me tell you something. Arthur Godfrey wants me on his Talent Scouts program, but I can't get anyone to be my Talent Scout.
Why don't you try the Boy Scouts of America? They're cooperative.
Your display of jealousy is boring me. Pardon me while I spray my throat.
Oh, get this. He's got an atomizer yet.
Ah. Not bad.
It's a good spray, huh?
It ought to be. That's the only atomizer I ever saw with an olive in it.
Oh, man. How I wished I had a spray like that when I was singing at the Coconut Grove in the old days, huh?
Oh, didn't you?
That's what I hear.
You know, Bing, show business is funny. When I was a guest on your program before, I thought it was going to be just another radio guest shot. But I sang, and suddenly it hit me. Singing is my racket. It opened up an entire new field for me.
I understand you're not bad out in the field, is it? You know, I think it's hardly fair to your public or to your admirers to just stand here and talk about your singing. I think it'd be very nice if you're serious about it, just sing a number for the folks. Sing it right now.
Well, I'd be very happy to.
Bing, how could you?
Well, I'm getting tired. I want to get off my feet for a minute.
Now, what'll I sing, baby? Tulips and Heather, that song Perry Como does so well?
Why don't you sing that corny little sea chanty that you know so well?
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, for my first selection, I will sing The Bold Fisherman, a bright yet compelling song of the sea. Fisherman set sail from off Billingsgate to catch the bold piggy and the gay mackerel. But when he got off Pimlico, the winds did begin to blow, and the little boat wibble wobble so that overboard went he, singing, wink-dee-deedle-down. Wink-dee-deedle-dee. quite a highly interesting song that he sung. Quinky-deedle-dum, quinky-deedle-dee, bold fisherman. Quinky-deedle-dum, quinky-deedle-dee, was the highly interesting song that he sung. Quinky-deedle-dum, quinky-deedle-dee, bold fisherman.
Oh, that was terrific, Bogey. Great.
Bing, think what you're
doing. I'm not kidding, baby. His voice grows on a fella.
Like a vine.
It's a little creepy, I must admit.
Never mind my singing. Let's talk about the African Queen for a while.
Bogey, it's no trouble at all to talk about the African Queen because it's a wonderful picture, great color. You and Katharine Hepburn, I understand, are up for Academy Awards as a result of this picture.
Well, I hope Hepburn wins an Oscar. I sent her a little mahogany shelf to put it on.
Well, that was a very, very nice gesture. Very nice of you to send her the shelf.
Well, he bought two.
I got mine to... I got mine to put my metronome on.
Twinkie-deedle-dee. Say, you know, there was one scene in The African Queen that really killed me. The scene where you had the whips and jingles, you know, the hangover?
Mm-hmm.
And Hepburn took all your gin and poured it in the river. You just slumped to the deck of the boat and you did nothing about it.
That, I believe, was the greatest test of my acting career.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to present a radio version of The African Queen. Miss Lorraine Bacall will play the part of Rose Sayer. The prim English lady is portrayed on the screen by Miss Katharine Hepburn. I will play the part of Charlie Allnut, the rough riverboat captain, trader, and jack of all trades.
May I ask a question?
Shoot.
Well, I'd like to shoot, but I'll just ask the question. What part do I play in this impending clambake?
We have made elaborate plans for you, Bogey. We've got that all straightened out. You're going to narrate the story.
We straightened it out?
Mm-hmm, baby and me.
And Bogey makes three.
That's right.
Okay. I'll narrate it, but watch out.
Well, we can take it. You just go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now present a radio version of The African Queen. The part of the girl in the picture was played by Miss Katharine Hepburn, one of our foremost actresses. Tonight, it will be played by Miss Lauren Bacall, a housewife.
Wait till we get home.
In the picture, the part of the man was played by Mr. Humphrey Bogart, who is famous for his dramatic roles. Tonight, it will be played by Mr. Bing Crosby, a cigarette salesman. This cannot possibly help the picture.
Now, don't make speeches. Come on.
The play which we now present deals with the perilous journey of a man and a woman cruising down the treacherous Ulanga River in Africa in a 30-foot launch to sink the German gunboat Königin Luise.
Only tonight, we're not going to sink the German gunboat.
And what are you going to sink?
We're going to sink the shrimp boats.
Well, I can't knock that. We now take you to Africa. Theme music, please. As our play opens, we find Mr. Crosby and Miss Bacall sitting on Mr. Crosby's launch discussing their perilous trip down the river.
I don't care if you want to sink the shrimp boats or not, ma'am. I've been thinking it over and it's impossible. This is a treacherous, winding, tricky river full of rocks and rapids and cataracts and waterfalls. We'd never make it down to the lake. Why, this little boat would be dashed to pieces before we knew it. I'd like to help you, ma'am, but what you ask is out of the question. It'd be plain suicide to attempt this journey. So forget about sinking them shrimp boats. We're not even going to try it.
Oh, come on, baby. Do it for me.
Okay, here we go.
And thus, with that hokey beginning, commences the journey of the African Queen. As the boat chugs down the river along the edge of the dense jungle, we see and hear many wild animals. Lion. Elephant.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bob Fancy Pants Ho.
Baboon! I'd like to capture that specimen. He's got the longest arms I've ever seen. Get him! Nail him!
Ahead is a tremendous cataract, a waterfall which takes a sheer drop of 75 feet into a boiling chasm below.
There's a bad waterfall up about a mile ahead, ma'am.
I may bounce out of the boat. Put your arms around me.
Okay, baby. I got you.
Tighter.
Hey, where'll you get there?
We made it.
Hey, break it up, break it up.
Well, what's the matter, baby?
This is a river in Africa, not the tunnel of love.
This man has an appalling lack of dramatic appreciation.
Hear that, ma'am? You hear it? Hear them savages singing on them shrimp boats?
It's blood-curdling.
Ma'am, I'll just take this old oxygen cylinder here and make a torpedo. Let's see now, how did old Bogey do that in the picture?
Hey, look out for that stuff.
I know what I'm doing. I'll just put this detonator on here and I'll tap the top on. It's not going on.
Oh, tap it a little harder.
Harder?
Thus endeth this version of the African Queen.
Hold the phone.
I think the sound man's got the bends. Take him out. We're not through with this thing yet.
What do you mean?
Well, baby and I haven't sung our song yet. We're going to do a duet in the sketch, weren't we?
Yeah, let's do it now, babe.
Certainly. The duet was the punch to the whole darn sketch, and you're trying to blow it.
A nice old number. I don't know why.
And you're singing it with a nice old number, too.
You're nice yourself. Let's go, then.
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why I just do.
I don't know why you thrill me like you do. I don't know why you just do.
You never seem to want my romancing.
The only time you hold me is when we're dancing.
I don't know why I love you like I do.
I don't know why I just do. I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why I just do.
I don't know why you thrill me like you do. I don't know why, but you do.
You never seem to want my romancing.
Why, the only time you hold me is when we're dancing.
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why
just do.
The mask is off. Yes, the mask is off in cigarette advertising. Chesterfield is the first to name all its ingredients.
And Chesterfield gives you every advantage known to modern science, supervised by experts in the most modern research laboratories. And Chesterfields are made by experts in the most modern cigarette factories. Outside independent consultants include scientists from leading universities.
For you, this means that Chesterfields are much milder with an extraordinarily good taste. And no unpleasant aftertaste, all for your smoking pleasure and protection. Sound off for Chesterfields and do it today. Much milder with a better taste and no unpleasant aftertaste. Chesterfield's the one to buy. Millions say they satisfy. Sound off
for Chesterfield.
Sound off
for Chesterfield.
Try a pack of Chesterfields and do it
today.
Song which seems destined to emerge in the 1951-52 season as the outstanding ballad.
Talk to her, please, Mr. Sun. Speak to her, Mr. Rainbow. And take her under your branches, Mr. Tree. Whisper to her, Mr. Wind.
Listen.
Sing to her, Mr. Robin. And Mrs. Moonlight, put in a word for me. Tell her how I feel. It shouldn't end this way. Since you are all her friends, she'll listen to whatever you have to say. Babble to her, Mr. Brooks. Kiss her for me, Miss Raindrop. And watch to see they all do, please, Mr. Sun.
Surprise, I would like to present a young lady to you, Miss Loretta North of Sydney, Australia. Miss North has been brought over here by 20th Century Fox in the interest of their picture, titled Kangaroo. Would you take a bow? Here's Miss North right here.
Thank you.
Loretta, I understand that you were selected from among 80,000 girls in Australia in the Miss Kangaroo contest there. Is that right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And Bing, I'd like to present you with this scroll from the Youth Association from Australia.
Hey, this is quite an unusual item. The Youth Association of Australia has honored presenters. Mm.
More than 500,000 members of the Australian Youth Association have selected you as our favorite singer.
Well, thank you.
You see, baby, in order to get anywhere, you have to be a singer.
And Mr. Crosby, yeah. Here's something else for you.
There's more?
Yes,
what?
A real live baby kangaroo from Australia.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Oh.
Say, isn't he a cute little fellow? Get him out here.
Gee, I'd like to have a kangaroo.
You're a panda man, remember?
Hey, isn't this something? He'll sure be a hit around the house. Well, Loretta, I want to thank you very, very much. This is a wonderful thing. I appreciate it. And thanks also to my friends in Australia. And Bogey, baby, what do you say we ankle over to the Brown Derby, huh?
What for?
Well, your atomizer's empty, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, sure it is. Well, let's go, Bing.
Okay.
Who's going to be with you next week?
Oh, next week, Lauren, we broadcast from Palm Springs, California. Our guest is going to be Mr. Jimmy Stewart. See you next week, then, folks. And meanwhile, remember, Chesterfields are much milder with an extraordinarily good taste. And from the report of a well-known research organization, Chesterfield leaves no unpleasant aftertaste. They satisfy millions. Good night, folks, and thank you very, very much.
The Bing Crosby Show, presented by Chesterfield, was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Bill Morrow and Murdo McKenzie. Tune in next week and hear Bing and his guest, Jimmy Stewart. Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall can be heard weekly on their own radio program, The Bold Venture.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Railroad Hour. And here comes our star-studded show train. Tonight, the Association of American Railroads presents the memorable musical hit, Charlie, starring Gordon McRae and his guest, Margaret Truman. Our choir is under the direction of Norman Luboff, and our music is prepared and conducted by Carmen Dragon. Yes, tonight another great musical success is brought to you by the American Railroads, the same railroads that bring you most of the food you eat, the clothes you wear, the fuel you burn, and all the other things you use in your daily life. And now, here is our star, Gordon McRae.
Thank you, Marvin Miller, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, sir, tonight on St. Patrick's Day, a Scot from Syracuse named McRae and a gal from Missouri named Truman will sing a famous Viennese waltz in a Hungarian gypsy operetta, most of which takes place in Paris. But seriously, I shall be a fellow named Irini who likes to fiddle, and lovely Margaret Truman will be the charming Shari. All my life, I have dreamed of two things, a girl and a violin. Often in the cool of evening, I have closed my eyes and seemed to see the girl. Then I picked up my shiny manufactured violin, an ordinary fiddle without a soul. And I've imagined it as one of the great violins of the world, a Stradivarius.
My faithful Stradivarius, on which I sail the stream of love impassioned music. Up to the Isle of Dreams, along through silvery moonlight, past stars all glowing and bright, I float above the foam.
I had neither the girl or the strand. And I never realized that both of them were in the little gypsy village of Lawrencefava in Central Europe.
Father, where have you been?
In the village, Shari.
Well, flirting with the girls again, I suppose.
Certainly not. Just letting them have a look at one of the world's geniuses.
Oh, Papa, people don't like to hear wild gypsy tunes these days.
Hmm?
They want to listen to the great compositions of the master.
The true violinist, my child, does not play from notes, but from the heart. Speaking of my violin, I think I should win a tune-up, my beautiful Stradivarius.
Why? You never play it anymore.
But I must take care of it. One day a king or a prince may ask me to play, and I must be ready.
Oh, dear. You're such a dreamer.
And you try to be so practical. Oh, you don't fool me, Shari. You're my daughter, and you inherit my dreaminess. But to my violin, to work.
Shari! Shari!
Yes, little neighbor.
Take me in your lap, Shari, and tell me a story.
All right. This story is a song, little neighbor. Once upon a time, you know, somehow it doesn't seem so once upon a time. This is an old, old legend that seems to be happening all over again. Both wise and mighty had a daughter blighty, who, while she was in her 20s, still refused to wed. Many suitors sought her, but this willful daughter did all parting with her, sinking off her head. At last her father, patient son, declared in solemn voice, 100 lovers gone by the
song deserves a kiss in the cheek.
What was that?
That, dear lady, was a kiss fresh from Paris.
Yeah, it was fresh, all right. Well, I'm waiting.
Oh, you want another one?
I want an explanation.
Well, you see, I'm a stranger here. But I happened to hear you sing, and I couldn't help but sneak up behind you and kiss you.
Run along, little neighbor. This seems like a dangerous man.
Gee, I think he's pretty brave. I've always wanted to try it.
Nor could I help hearing your song. Your father is forcing you to marry, and I want you to know that I'm on your side.
You keep on your side.
You know, of course, I took an awful chance sneaking up behind you like that. You, might have had a husband.
You're a very impertinent young man. Please leave.
Oh, don't make me go. You know that I've wandered all over Europe, and everywhere the sky was dark, and the air was heavy, and the hills were black. And then I came into this garden, and... well, it was like a dawn.
Love has wings, which it gladly flings for the distant sky, far above the world of sadness. Love's a bird, not a written word from a lover's breast, without pause or rest.
that's very nice.
Well, it seems to me I've found the girl I've been looking for. And now if I could only find the violin.
What violin?
They told me an old gypsy fiddler somewhere in this neighborhood had a beautiful violin. Stradivarius. If I could only get that old character to let me use it.
Well, what's going on out here?
Oh, this is my father, Polly Rott.
Polly Rott? The famous gypsy violinist? I've heard of you, sir, and your wonderful music since I was a small boy.
Well, now here, Shari, is a young man with taste.
Shari? Shari. I knew you'd have a beautiful name like that.
And who are you?
My name is Arini, sir. I'm a fiddler, too, and I've been asked to play before the king at a special command performance in Paris. But all I have is a creaky instrument that fights me.
What do you play, my boy? That silly, stodgy stuff from notes, or do you play the songs of the people... from your heart?
Well, from the notes, of course.
No, you have not yet learned the secret.
Tell me, sir, would you consider selling or lending me your famous fiddle?
Don't you dare call it that.
You see, Father always says a fiddle is a fiddle, but a Stradivarius is a violin.
Yes, and as for selling it or lending it, I would just as soon sell my heart or part with my right arm.
Well, then, I have a better idea. Why don't you come to Paris and play for the king?
Paris?
Ah, that makes me think of the days and nights of my youth, especially the nights. How we waltzed in those days.
Papa, you said you were waiting for a king to command you to play again.
But I can't go to Paris. Though I am still young, the girls of my youth there are now grandmothers. Oh, it would hurt.
Well, come to Paris and meet their granddaughters.
Granddaughters? I forgot about them. I will. No, I won't either. There are two other reasons. The gout and Shari.
We'll all go to Paris together. You take care of your gout, and I'll take care of your lovely daughter.
Shall we do it, Shari?
Oh, yes, Papa, yes.
When you think of what railroads mean to your community and to your country, you may think of the employment they furnish, or the purchases they make, or the taxes they pay. But the most important thing railroads do is to run trains. For it is trains of cars running on the steel highways provided and maintained by the railroads themselves, which furnish the low-cost common carrier transportation service, on which the agriculture, the industry, and the defense of America are soundly based. The whole American economy is built up on the services of these trains. Trains which haul anything in any quantity for anybody in any season of the year. And between all sections of the continent. And do it with a minimum expenditure of manpower, money, and materials. That's one of those facts that in ordinary times we just take for granted. But in times of emergency, it comes to be a matter of real concern. Remember the time of Pearl Harbor, when many folks seriously doubted whether the railroads could handle the country's tremendous military transportation demands. But they did handle them, moving 90% of all war freight traffic and 97% of all organized military travel. And now, in another period of crisis and mobilization, the ability of the railroads to do all that may be asked of them again becomes crucial. To prepare themselves better for whatever may lie ahead, the railroads have spent in the past 6 years more than $6 billion for new and better freight cars, for new and more powerful locomotives, and for improved tracks, signals, yards, and railroad facilities of all sorts. But the railroads still need more freight cars, more new locomotives, more improvements of all kinds. In securing these needed facilities, they are encountering difficulties both in getting materials and in earning the funds necessary to carry out their program of improvement. But you may be sure that the railroads will never stop trying to do all they can to meet the needs of our great country, whether in war or in peace. Now here is Act Two of Charlie, starring Gordon McRae as Irini and Margaret Truman as Charlie. And so we went to Paris. Polly Ross, his daughter Shari, and I. How nervous we all were. For the famous gypsy violinist was to appear for the first time in 10 years to play his famous Stradivarius. I was a mere fiddle player, delighted to take a back seat, but very happy because Shari was with me.
We shouldn't have come to Paris, Irini. I'm afraid something will go wrong.
Now, what can go wrong, Shari?
Oh, Papa isn't young anymore, and I... Well, for the first time in my life, I feel too young.
Oh, listen. Listen to the sounds in the air. Listen to what Paris is saying to us. Young love is everywhere. Take it while you can.
Yes, I hear it.
Get ready for the command performance before the King of the Sailors.
I shall put on my Sunday best.
Good.
The Contessa Mustari, the Marquis de Cadeau, Mademoiselle Charlie Rat.
Oh.
What's that she's wearing on her head, a lampshade?
In Paris, the city of fashion, how can anybody wear those rags? How did she get in?
Please, please. In my tiny village, these are the bright colors we wear. But I see that Paris is no place for a girl from the country. When I left home, party shoes and all the rest, and I was sure that I would turn the hair of every man I met. Many compliments I get, in a flutter heart I'd set. But the people here do not appear to know much of the style.
but at home my friends would all admire. Just makes this lady smile. The men are worth the arms of whom they look at me and then they grin. I made you just beware. Things are not the same here as they were back there. In your country home, the men may call you queen. Here they only notice you because you're green. People laugh at everything you say or do. You'll be sorry that you came before you.
From one of the most celebrated violinists of our day. He has come out of retirement to play his famous Stradivarius, the man whose melodies we have heard about for so many years. And now we shall hear them with our own ears. Polly Rock.
Go. Go, Polly Rock. Play.
Father, what's wrong?
Your Majesty, I...
Father, are you all right?
Your Majesty, I cannot play. I have not played my beautiful violin in 10 years. I've just kept it to look at, remembering in my head the lovely melodies of my youth. So you see, this Stradivarius is no good to me. I might as well smash it into a million pieces.
Oh, no, don't.
Could I have it for just a moment, Polly?
Take it, Irene. I give it to you.
Tell me, Polly, is this the melody you were going to play?
Why? My gypsy melody.
How did you know it?
That melody was never written down, only in my heart.
It's the Strad, Polly. It's this violin.
I always knew it was a magic violin.
My faith. Stradivari, on which I sail the streams of love, impassioned music, up to the Isle of Dreams, along through silvery moonlight, past stars all glowing and bright. Oh,
Stradivarius belongs to you now, Irini. To me, it was just a memory, but you have made it live again.
My boy, we are most pleased.
I thank you, Your Majesty. All my life, I have wanted to play on a magic violin and to hold in my arms a girl like Shari.
No, Irini. You will be the toast of Paris now, but I am only a village gypsy, and everyone laughs at me.
My children, they will not laugh again. For I hereby bestow on you the title of the Count and Countess of Stradivarius. Now go, play, dance,
and the whole world will be young again.
Yes, the whole world will be young.
Margaret Truman will be back in just a moment. Our thanks to the other members of our cast, to Francis X. Bushman, Theodore Von Elk, Dick Beals, and the entire company. Charlie, with book and lyrics by Julius Wilhelm, Max Grunbaum, C.C.S. Cushing, and E.P. Heath, and music by Emmerich Kallmann, was dramatized for the Railroad Hour by Lawrence and Lee. The Railroad Hour is brought to you each week at this time by the American Railroads. You know, every minute of every day, someone, somewhere, calls on the Red Cross for help. The Red Cross is able to answer these urgent pleas only through your help. When you contribute to the 1952 Red Cross campaign, you help make it possible for the Red Cross to maintain its disaster service, its services to the armed forces, and to veterans, its blood bank program, and many other activities. And now, here again is our charming guest, Margaret Truman.
Gordon, it was delightful being here.
Margaret, you are a wonderful Shari.
Oh, thank you. You know, we're probably the only show in radio tonight that didn't sing Irish music.
A happy Hungarian St. Patrick's Day to you, Margaret.
Tell me, Gordon, what can we all listen to on next week's Railroad Hour?
Well, you can listen to one of the great hits of our day, Margaret. Patrice Munzel and I will be singing the enchanting music of Kiss Me, Kate.
Wouldn't miss it. Good night, Gordon.
Good night, Margaret, and come back real soon.
All aboard!
Well, sir, it looks as though we're ready to pull out. And so until next week, and kiss me, Kate, this is Gordon MacRae saying goodbye.
Charlie was presented by special arrangement with Tams Whitmark Music Library. Gordon MacRae can be seen starring in Warner Brothers' About Face. Our choir is under the direction of Norman Luboff, and our music is prepared and conducted by Carmen Dreck. This is Marvin Miller saying goodbye until next week for the American Railroad. Now keep tuned to your Monday night of music on NBC.
Now,
now, the voice of Firestone brings you Christopher Lynch on NBC.